Welcome to Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? I'm Annie.
And I'm Dave. Each month we take it in turn to nominate a film, TV show or book we're a fan of before we were married and the other one doesn't really know.
Then we both watch or read it and come together to discuss our reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers.
So today we're doing the film Save the Last Dance.
2001?
Yeah. Why? Why did we pick it? Why did you pick it, I should say?
I think it's been on the list for a while. I've been watching a lot of dancing recently.
Real people dancing.
Real people dancing, yeah, definitely come back to that. So, yeah, I don't know, I thought after we'd had hard-hitting prison drama, I thought we'd have a bit of fluff because I was going away and was trying to think of a film that I wanted to watch while I was away.
That didn't really work out, did it?
No.
Because fluff it is...
Less fluffy than I remembered.
Fluff it is not.
Fluff yes. It is not.
So there's...
Cliché it is, fluff it is not.
Well, we'll come to that in a minute.
Yeah. But
it's going to be a particularly interesting and exciting episode, listeners, because while I have my usual set of extensive notes, I haven't actually sorted them into any kind of order, so I'm not entirely sure how I can understand what I'm doing. And while...
Uh-oh, we're both winging it.
And while Annie also has extensive notes, where she normally just does it from memory, she claims that despite having only written them yesterday, she can't read what she's written.
I can't... No, it's not that I can't read what I've written. I can't remember what it says. So I might have to actually... Anyway, do you want to do a brief plot synopsis for anybody who hasn't seen it?
Sure. So...
Oh, God, winging it.
What's her name?
Sarah?
No.
Julia Stiles.
So future Annie, cutting back.
Or not.
Give me the line again.
Do you want to give a brief plot synopsis for anybody who hasn't seen it?
Sure. So the main draw for this film is a very young Julia Stiles.
Well, for you. I mean, for me too, but not for everybody.
I guess.
I mean, that could lead into the incredible problematicness of us discussing this movie.
What I meant was, she was the person who was well known at the time.
Sure.
And therefore the reason why most people would go and see it.
Anyway.
She is playing a young woman who is trying to get into ballet school. And at the start of the film, while she is... doing her audition to get into Juilliard, which is a very prestigious ballet school, dance school in America.
New York.
Because her mother has not turned up in the audience to watch her perform, she makes mistakes and fails to get in. And we will definitely talk about that later. But what she doesn't find out till afterwards is that her mother, while rushing to get to the rehearsal, is in a car accident and dies. And then we cut to some period of time later, where she's now moved in with her father, who she doesn't really know, and she goes to a new high school, which is mostly black students, and she rediscovers her love of dance by learning about hip-hop.
Forming relationships with people at the school.
Yes.
Particularly a very attractive young man.
Yes.
Okay. So... do you want to do facts before we talk about the elephant in the room?
No, let's do the elephant in the room first.
Yes. Dave and I feel as if we are going to find it a bit difficult to talk about this film because...
I'm interrupting you already.
Yeah, but it's a story of my life. Carry on.
But I'm really intrigued because I was all ready to make this speech. And then for you to go, I don't understand what you mean. Instead, you're making exactly the same speech.
Oh yeah, I was watching the film and I was thinking
really interesting.
We should do something else for the podcast because I do not feel that I can talk about this film because it's about race and we are upper middle class white people.
In England.
And we don't do that.
So the interesting thing, the main single thing that I would say about this film is that for a film that is notionally about dancing, it's not in any way about dancing. Or it's only very, very tangentially about
very
dancing.
Very tangentially about dancing.
What this film...
I have a lot to say about the dancing, I have to say. Yeah. That's the thing I can talk about with some authority.
I've got a fairly large section on the dancing as well.
And I do have a lot of interesting things to say about the arc of how the theme of race is presented and why I think it's bad.
So the reason why what's supposed to be a fluffy romantic dance film with a happy ending is possibly the hardest thing I've found to talk about since we started doing the podcast is because this film isn't about dancing. This film is about black culture. That's really what it's about. But the problem is that its display of black culture is made up of a number of very stereotypical tropes.
Yes.
But my problem is that I'm so far separated from black culture, especially black culture in America myself, that I can't tell whether those tropes are derogatory or they're tropes because they're common and real.
Well,
and
one
so
of the
I
things...
don't know how to talk about it.
Okay. And also, the issue for me is that whilst there are only two real white characters in the film, Sarah and her father, she is the protagonist.
Yes.
And it is entirely told from her point of view.
Yes.
Apart from maybe one or two scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So that in itself is potentially an issue. I forgot to look up, and now I feel really bad because I meant to. I thought it was really important that I look up who the people were who made it, who wrote it, and who directed it. Do
I
you
did.
Know?
Yes.
Okay. Are they black?
No.
Okay. Even bigger problem.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
This film is a problem.
Possibly.
Okay.
Should we do some facts?
Yeah, go on.
So this film came out in 2001. It had mixed reviews from critics, but was a significant box office success. It grossed $131.7 million worldwide against only a $30 million budget, so made back 10 times its money. It was made by MTV. That was
yes.
Those people who put the money up when MTV still did stuff. Music still on MTV, as they say in
yes.
the song. It opened at number one in the American box office, briefly. It wasn't there for long, but it,
okay.
did, it did open as number one. The director wasn't really known for doing anything big beforehand. Neither was the writer. I was,
and they're both white.
Yes, I was really,
yikes.
I was really interested in the writer, particularly. He is a white person. Subsequently to doing this film, which is the first major thing he did, he wrote all of the Step Up movies.
Oh, okay.
And that's and a whole bunch of other. Much lesser known, but also dance movies. That's his thing.
Yeah.
So he writes black culture / dance movies, even though he's a white guy.
Wow, I'm surprised that dancing wasn't better.
We will no
come
doubt
to
come to that. But
yes.
I did find it interesting. It's got almost exactly 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. So with the people who...
Very split, yeah.
Yeah, the so that, I can't remember whether Rotten Tomatoes is that professionals or the public. I think it's professionals, isn't it? Reviewers.
Mm. No, I don't think so. Metacritic is the review.
Oh, whichever one it is, it's almost exactly split.
Okay.
The only awards that it won were from Teen Choice, where it won quite a lot of those, but it didn't get any looking on any of the other ones. And I have a Wikipedia quote, if you don't mind me reading
a thing out.
Which is a quote from one of the reviewers. Quote, along with similar themed teen movies from the early 2000s, such as Honey, You Got Served and Stomp the Yard, the, quote, dancing in Save the Last Dance is almost uniformly derided as mediocre at best and borderline offensive at worst. Its characterization of, quote, hip-hop dancing amounting nothing more than to random finger-pointing and to be able to sit awkwardly in a chair.
Yes, that was bad. I read The Guardian review, which admittedly is by a white reviewer, which said, I didn't keep the link, but paraphrased that it was a young white girl goes to school in the, you know, bad areas of Chicago and meets a luscious young black man who fortuitously is as ambitious as she is, characterized by a scholarship to Georgetown Medical School, and that while it was possibly more hard-hitting on the questions of race relations than you might expect, it sunk under the weight of its cliches.
Pretty much.
And other people, potentially reviewers of colour, did criticise it for its slightly patchy approach to the question of race.
So let me ask the question which I always ask right at the start of these things, which is, who is this for?
Well, at the time, me. I mean, it's four white teenage girls who have a very romanticized idea about what it might be like to go to school in Chicago, maybe? I don't know.
So my guess, for want of a better word, is that this film was essentially written for white teenage girls.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And yet, I would argue that the majority of what the writer is trying to do is highlight the effects of poverty, family breakdown, and other social issues about black people in America.
And also white privilege.
I mean, yes, I don't think that's as much of a thing that the writer is pushing as the first one.
Yeah.
But I think what he's really trying to do is say, look at the problems that these folks have. What could we do about it? That's my feeling from watching the film, is he's trying to tell a social commentary of the black story in America and saying this is, you know, things that...
Before it became problematical for white people to do that.
Yeah. And as I said before, he's doing that through a bunch of tropes that I don't know whether they're only tropey because they're the things that white people hear about. Oh, look, there's another teenage black mother. Or they're tropey because that is genuinely a thing that happens a lot. It is very difficult to tell.
Yeah, it is difficult to tell. I mean, we're going to go straight into this, are we? I thought that the arc of the attitude... So Sarah goes to the school and she meets Derek, who, interestingly enough...
Well, she meets... Is it his sister?
Well, she meets him first because they have the argument in the class. So in the literature class, they have an argument about Truman Capote and black writers having done it first, essentially.
Okay.
Because she says that Truman Capote created a new genre, the nonfiction novel, and Derek argues that there were black writers doing it beforehand and that she needs to read more widely. And it's really interesting because it's a meet-cute in a sort of high school rom-com.
Mm.
Well, it's not a comedy, but a high school romance drama. And it's them having an argument about literature in a way that kids do not do in high school movies. I'm amazed that the teacher wasn't going, oh my God, what is going on? You two need to really go to college. Which obviously they both are. But anyway.
Well, she's going to Juilliard.
Well, she's going to Juilliard. I mean, Juilliard's going to give her a standard education as well.
Can I sidetrack just for a second?
Sure.
One of the things that
story
I...
Story of my life.
One of the things that I read said, on the one hand, Julia Stiles' dancing is not remotely in any way good enough to get anywhere near an audition, never mind actually going to Juilliard.
No.
However, given that Julia Stiles did all of her own dancing and until 2 months...
No, she didn't.
Well, that you can... There's a lot of her being...
There's a lot of close-ups of her from the waist up.
Yes.
And all of the actual full body shots are from behind at a distance, and all of the close-ups of her feet on point are somebody else.
Oh yeah, well the feet are definitely other people. But my point was that until 2 months before the shooting, she'd never done any dancing at all.
Mm.
So what you see of her doing stuff from the waist up, which isn't awful.
No, it's not terrible.
Is stuff that she's cram learnt in a couple of months.
Yeah, absolutely. So, they could have found an actual dancer
yes.
who could also act.
Yes.
Because dancers do act.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And actors do dance.
I'm not disagreeing.
Yes.
But my point is that her dancing is bad compared to what it should be for a person in that role in the film.
Yeah.
But it's still quite impressive what she managed to do and how much time she had.
What was your point? Because I was talking about something completely else. And you interrupted me and there was no reason for it. Anyway.
Life?
Well, there is that. Yes, I was going to come back to the dancing because I can talk about the dancing.
Sorry, Karen.
But my point was that the arc of...
Yes, sorry.
...of the attitude to them... So they do get together fairly
mm-hmm.
early on in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And to begin with, she turns up. She's very vastly in a minority as a white person in this school.
There are other white kids there.
There are other white kids there.
There's at least a couple have lines.
What we see, what I thought was really interesting was that Sarah turns up
mm-hmm.
as very much in a minority as a white student in the school. She goes into the school. The first person that she really speaks to outside of the argument with Derek in the class is Chenille,
mm-hmm.
who helps her because she swipes her backpack that she's left lying on the mm-hmm. ground and isn't paying attention to and says, don't put your stuff on the floor because people will nick it.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's being nice.
Mm-hmm.
The next time we see interaction at the school, Sarah goes into lunch, classic lunchtime cafeteria scene. She doesn't know where to sit. She looks across at the general selection of people. She sees one table of white kids.
Mm-hmm.
She does not go towards the table of white kids
mm-hmm.
because she sees Chenille sitting at a table with some spaces. So mm-hmm. she beelines towards Chenille, but before she gets there, other people come in and take mm-hmm. the seats. Next time we see her, she's talking to a black student who is classically nerdy with glasses and talking mm-hmm. about something to do with science.
Mm-hmm.
And Chenille rescues her and says, don't let me see you sitting at that table again. Not because she's mixing, you know, she's only sitting with the white kids or she's, you know, she's not being isolated because she's white, is my point. Chenille is perfectly friendly towards her.
Mm-hmm.
The other people in Chenille's friendship group are perfectly friendly towards her. Even Derek is friendly towards her.
That's not true at the end. And it's not...
This is my point.
Oh, sorry.
To begin with, there is no issue.
Yeah.
They hang out at the club. There mm-hmm. is no issue. She gets together with Derek. There is no issue.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, there becomes an issue.
Yes.
And Chenille has a go at her about being white and taking the only decent guy that they have left after jail, drugs, and drive-bys.
So she says more specifically... Not, you know, the only decent guy in the school because he's the one who's going to be a doctor and is going to get the scholarship to Georgetown, but taking quotes, direct quotes, the good black men.
Yes.
What's with all you white girls coming and taking the good black men?
And Derek's friend and Malachi has a go at him for snowflaking, one of them calls it.
Okay.
And suddenly there's this whole massive thing about them being a mixed-race couple that wasn't there to begin with.
Mm.
And then at the end, Chenille goes, oh, I was just having a thing because my boyfriend is rubbish.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have said any of that. And that's the main emotional scene in the film, is Chenille having a go.
No, it's not.
Well, one of the main
yes.
emotional scenes in the film is Chenille having a go. And then she takes it back. And I was like, oh, suddenly it's a whole thing because one of the supposedly good characters is saying it, not just Nikki, the ex-girlfriend
mm-hmm.
who's jealous,
mm-hmm.
and Malachi, who's actually a drug dealer and is so also trying to get Derek to do crime. So suddenly it's a whole thing. And then like 20 minutes later, she's like, oh, Derek, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have said these things to your girlfriend. Go and get her back. And I'm like, it's so disjointed and so uneven and inconsistent,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't really know what to do with it. Because it felt like it was trying to make a point, and then it kind of like slid back round to it, oh, it's all fine. And I didn't know what to do with that.
Is that not the kind of, if you remove the race element, is that not the kind of arc you get in every teenage high school movie?
Probably.
That the couple get together and it's all fine, and then because of something that one of their friends says, they have a big fight and fall out, and then they get back together at the end.
Yes, that's a very good point. True.
So we're following an arc. We're just, the causal incident is more... It really feels to me that the writer really wants to write social commentary.
Yeah, but it's
and
just so uneven.
Because the writer is saying that there are people in the black community who have these type of opinions, and I want to...
And that are possibly valid?
I'm a long way from being able to understand what the writer wants to say.
Yeah, because the bit that felt...
But I don't feel that he wants to say those opinions. I don't think he has an opinion on the validity of those opinions. I think he just wants to talk about the fact that they exist.
Yeah, because the whole thing of Chenille disapproving of Sarah and Derek being together doesn't really ring true, and she has a reason for saying that because she's herself upset about her relationship, and then she kind of comes back around and says that she was wrong. But the bit that potentially does ring true is she says, you know, you're coming into our world, and Sarah says there's only one world, Chenille, and Chenille's response is, that's what they teach you, we know different.
Yeah.
And that felt true to me.
So let's take a step back for a second. There was a guy that I used to work with who was black, who I used to go to the pub with at lunchtime, Andrew. And he was a really, really nice bloke. And one of the things that he used to say was, especially in this country, especially middle-class people in this country are very uncomfortable talking about race But black people are very, very comfortable talking about race because they have to all the time.
Mm.
They don't have any choice.
Yeah.
And it's because you sit in a position of privilege where you're outside of this that you just don't have to deal with the situation.
Yeah.
And so it's not surprising for the black characters in the film to make things about being black because, you know, you don't have any choice. It's interesting, one of the things that in my middle of my big muddle of notes that I did definitely write down while watching the film is, could you make the vast majority of the statements that the writer wants to make while having all the cast still be white? Because most of the statements that he wants to make, and a genuine question, I would like to know your opinion on whether most of the statements he wants to make are not about being black, they're about being poor.
Well, this is one of the things I said partway through. I wrote down that it's not about race, it's about class. But a lot of the issues in America, that's very much intertwined. One of the things I thought that was really, really clunky is right at the end, you've got the high drama section of her going back and doing her audition again. And it's obviously the full circle of her emotional arc, and so it's very emotionally charged for her. But you've also got it intercut with Derek's friend Malachi going to get revenge on a rival gang. And so you've got a white girl auditioning at Juilliard intercut with black men shooting each other in a drive-by. And I was like, this is bad.
So I don't think we can carry on with the conversation about these bits until we contextualise it by describing the characters, because we haven't really talked about the characters yet.
Okay.
So Chenille is a young white woman at school. She is the same age as the other characters. So what,
17.
16, 17. So she's got a baby that's, I don't know, 18 months, something like that?
No, he's way younger than that.
About
6 months old.
Okay. So there's a whole trope about young black women and having kids in their teens. You've got Derek?
Her brother.
Yeah. So is he her brother?
Derek is her brother. The main guy
yeah.
is Chenille's brother.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm just really confused because I can't remember seeing both of them in the house at the same time, but I watched the film a while back.
Yeah,
so the
first time when Chenille rescues Sarah and takes her to introduce her to her friends at lunch, she sees Derek sitting in the windowsill and she goes, oh God, he's such an asshole. And Chenille goes, who? And she goes, oh, that guy over there in the blue sweater.
Oh, yes,
you know,
yes.
He had a go at me in
yeah.
class and he's just so up himself, whatever.
Yeah.
And Chenille goes, that's my brother. And Sarah just kind of looks at her and goes, oh my God, you know, what have I done? I've just destroyed the only friendship that I've got. And then it's all fine because Chenille thinks it's really funny.
Yeah.
Yes. So Derek is her brother.
So Derek's her brother and he is two tropes. He is the one good, in inverted commas, young black man who's going to escape from
the hood
through education.
By going to college, yeah.
So he's that trope. But he's also the, when I was young, I was a hoodlum. I went off and did stuff. And I broke
into a warehouse.
And I broke the law and did stuff. But now, through the power of education and, you know, good family, I am now a good person.
But
so
I am at risk of being pulled back into the gang lifestyle because my friend sacrificed himself and went to prison for me. And
yeah.
now he's asking me to do stuff and loyalty, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so that's... This film is tropey as a
and they are living with their grandmother because their
mother
went to prison for drugs and prostitution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when she got out, she abandoned them.
Yes. And died of a drug overdose?
I don't think it says that. No, because Sarah says maybe she'll come back. And Chenille knows Derek used to believe that one.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So, trope-tastic.
And then you've got Malachi, who is the
gangbanger.
The gang... Is that a word?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Who is the... I'm either not very smart or I don't have the kind of social support to be able to study at school.
I know who I am and where I come from.
that.
So I have to do drugs and sell drugs and run around with guns.
The got a very weird facial expression.
This whole thing, I'm not sure. Anyway, apologies, audience, if we are doing this incredibly badly. I don't really know. Anyway, carry on.
But he has a scene just before he gets in his car to go off and do the drive-by at the end, in which he says, and I didn't write the exact quote down, but it's something like, I've got to go and do this because I've got to have respect, because respect is the only thing I have and I can't afford to lose it.
Yeah.
And you can hear the respect with a capital R thing. And on the one hand, again, it's really tropey. I've got to do violence and drugs because otherwise people won't respect me and I've got nothing else. On the other hand, I suspect it's tropey because it's true.
Yeah, quite possibly.
But
do you think the film is kind of, well, I mean, not deliberately, but it's only really acceptable that Sarah gets together with a black guy because he's got a scholarship to Georgetown Medical School? So he's not.
I mean,
really.
I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say yes.
There's a lot. There's a lot of problems. Not least of which is the dancing. Can I talk about the dancing?
So, can I make one statement that I'm sure you're going to make anyway, if that's all right?
Go on.
Before you go into the rest of it.
About the dancing?
About the dancing.
Yeah.
Which is that you would have thought... It's kind of two things. You would have thought that for a film that is supposed to be about dancing, that A, you'd have got some people that could dance.
Mm-hmm.
And B, you'd have got the people that could dance and given them at least one scene
where you could see them dancing.
Where they did some dancing.
Well, the problem is that you don't ever get to see any of the dancing in a decent way because it's not actually, when it's actually half decent dancing, it's not them doing it. So when you've got the actual actors, so that you can see that there's the actual actors, you can only film them in close-up from the waist up. So you can't actually see the dancing because they're not doing it.
So the problem with the dancing is the casting.
Mm.
I haven't really thought of it like that, but it makes perfect sense. So when the times that you see them dancing are in the nightclub, which mostly seems to involve, I don't know the terminology.
Gyrating
and grinding.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
And it's on a crowded dance floor.
Yeah. Or you've got Derek teaching Sarah some hip-hop moves, in which you've got another classic trope of the person who either has never danced before or has only learned a formal style like ballet and is incredibly stiff, and then you have almost like a montage where they become more loose in the way they move.
Hang on.
And then the third dancing you see is the
audition.
What you never see is a couple of people who are actually good at hip-hop
doing hip-hop
in an open space doing hip-hop.
Yes.
It's just really
sad. That is very true. It is very sad. So, I feel as if I can talk.
It's an area of your expertise.
Well, it's only armchair expertise, be clear. But in the last 5 months, I have watched 14 seasons of So You Think You Can Dance.
That's quite a lot.
So I have seen an awful lot of very good dancing, including both ballet and hip-hop. And I have seen hip-hop dancers doing contemporary, and I have seen ballet dancers doing hip-hop. And it is true that the ballet dancers find the hip-hop very difficult because their training is all in poise and rigid stance and very straight lines. And in hip-hop, as they say on the show, you have to get down in the pocket.
Oh.
And it's a very different thing. But anyway, having seen an awful lot of very good ballet, an awful lot of very good contemporary dance, and an awful lot of very good hip-hop, there is none of that in this movie.
Mm.
And none of the dancing that Julia Stiles does, bless her, would get her anywhere near Juilliard.
No.
Absolutely not, no.
No. I find it interesting that she auditions for Juilliard at the start, and then, I mean, this is what you need to do to have a coherent narrative. But instead of oh my God, I'm a failure, I must go off and never dance again. You just go and audition for a slightly less good dance school, because there's an awful lot of other dance schools.
But it's not to do with that.
There.
It's to do with her having wrapped up the whole thing of the audition and her dancing with her mum dying.
It's also really
interesting. She associates them very closely, and so she finds it very difficult.
It's also...
I thought that was actually quite well done.
Mm. It's also really interesting that for somebody who is... If you're going to go to Juilliard to do dance...
Mm.
My assumption is that your desire is to be a professional dancer.
Yes,
now,
absolutely.
So, given that she is going to go off to be a professional dancer, in the rest of the film, she never talks about dancing to anybody.
No, because she's given it up. So she's not going to be a professional dancer anymore.
Except the point is that when she starts getting lessons from Derek...
Mm.
This is the point where she unwraps her ballet shoes again after putting them away when her mum dies.
Yeah.
And there's effectively a jump cut slash montage of what I assumed was like 6 months of her getting back into practice before going to the thing.
The audition again. Yeah.
If you were going to become a professional dancer and that was the thing that you really wanted to do, you would... He absolutely obsessed about it and talk about it all the time, and it would be the main thing you really wanted to do.
Yeah, well, you'd
do.
Have to be doing training and dancing and practice like 6-8 hours a day.
Mm. And she doesn't talk about it to anybody.
No,
she
starts it up again, it's true.
She doesn't seem interested at all in the thing that she wants allegedly to spend her entire life doing.
Yeah, that's true. So, the also slight unfortunateness is that the only time you actually see any people doing proper dancing is when Derek takes her to the ballet as a surprise date.
Oh, and
you do see some of the ballet on the stage, and that is phenomenal, and it massively shows up how bad her dancing is. Because there's at one point, the male ballet dancer is doing a full press lift
of
the female dancer with one arm, and he's just wandering about the stage holding her up in the air, and I'm like it's nothing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, because that is so hard.
Well,
and then they lie down, and she's lying on top of him, and he does a full press lift from lying down, just straight up into the air. I was like, oh my God. So, yes, that was unfortunate, because they were really good, because they were professional ballet dancers.
Oh, yes.
Actually doing ballet.
Of which there is no doubt, yes.
Yeah, anyway, sorry. Dancing, bit of an obsession for me at the moment.
Yeah, so when she does her second audition for Juilliard, when at the end the guy says, not officially, suppose...
I can't say this on the record yet,
welcome
to
Juilliard.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's because they have to tell him in the
moment.
That
they got
rid of
that. It's appalling, no, because
they
couldn't do that.
Do the ballet section, and then they separate that from doing the contemporary section.
Yes.
Now, first of all, can you name another film where they've done that?
What, separating ballet from contemporary?
Hmm.
Not really.
At least I think so. Have you seen Flashdance?
Oh gosh, not for a very long time.
Because I vaguely remember that in Flashdance she does an audition. And what reminded me is that exactly the same as Julie Stiles in this, when she does the contemporary section, she goes into the wings and brings on a chair.
Yes.
And that's exactly what the character does in Flashdance. And in Flashdance, what she does is she starts off doing her contemporary part in a way that feels relatively stiff and ballet-like.
You're talking about Julia Stiles?
No.
Oh.
In Flashdance.
Okay, because...
We'll come to that. And then she falls over.
Oh.
And then she says, can I do it again? And the guy says, you're almost certainly not going to get in now because you fell over, but you can have another go. And they start it again, and then she starts doing the relatively stiff bit, and then just past the part where she fell over, she suddenly turns into this amazing contemporary dancer that does this incredible performance.
Right.
And the point is that, you know, it starts being good when she changes style.
And that's exactly what happens in this as well.
Well, what happens in...
Only it's not good.
Yeah, but I mean, she doesn't fall over in this.
Yes, she does.
Oh, yes, she does, because that's when Derek turns up.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, good point.
She does exactly the same thing. She's doing like a stiff, sort of formal, sort of almost ballet introduction.
But what's
And then she falls over and then she starts again. And when she gets past that point, she goes into the hip-hop bit.
But what's interesting...
Only it's not hip-hop.
Yeah, but what's...
In any way.
But what's interesting is even in the hip-hop bit, she's still doing ballet moves.
Yes.
Even in the hip-hop bit. Because while she's doing some of the hip-hop stuff, she's still doing it on point.
No, she's not, because she's not wearing point shoes at that point.
Is she?
No. She's barefoot. But she is still doing ballet-type moves.
But she's definitely doing that. But she's also... What is she doing?
Pointing.
She's doing the pointing.
Yes.
Talk about the pointing.
I mean, I can't, because it doesn't make any sense to me. There's this whole weird pointing thing that seems to be related in some way to hip-hop, only it's not.
So
as far as I'm aware.
So she's doing this weird pointing stuff, and when she's doing the pointing, you get these camera snap close-ups to her hands doing the pointing.
Yeah,
it was so weird.
I meant to look up the choreographer as well. I'm very bad on my research, but no, it just wasn't very good.
Mm.
Anyway, I thought there was one bit that I thought was really, really excellent. Can I talk about that?
Sure. What's it about?
So, when she's getting ready for her second audition, and there's this whole emotional intensity around it.
This is the second thing I wanted to talk about.
Her mother is dead, and she's fallen out with Derek, and she's having a conversation with her dad.
So this is the one thing I wanted to bring up.
Yeah. So she hasn't had a particularly good relationship with her dad because she doesn't know him very well because he hasn't really been in her life. He's taken her in after her mother's died. He's doing his best, as far as I can tell. He's not great, but he's doing his best.
So he is a jazz...
Trumpet player.
Trumpet player. Yeah. And he is... out from
late at night,
you know, when she gets back from school, he goes out to work, and then he comes back in the early hours. So
they don't have much interaction.
So they don't really see each
other.
She's
very prickly, which is kind of understandable because she's 17. She's just lost her mum.
She's resentful of the situation,
and she doesn't really know him.
And she's in a whole new place. When they've been in the same place together for a little while, there's a scene where he says, "If you'd like to get to know me better, you're welcome to come to the club anytime, and when I'm not playing, the two of us can hang out and get to know each other." And she's like, "I don't care.
Yeah, I'm not interested." So when she's getting ready for the audition, he comes and he says, "You know, how are you doing?" And she says, "You know, I'm really stressed out because of the audition, and I've fallen out with Derek. Everything's gone wrong." And I thought that scene was really, really lovely.
It was incredibly well acted.
Because he reveals that he's finally completed the spare bedroom that was going to be her room. And he takes her in, and she sort of sits down, and she's getting upset. And he is being supportive to her. And she says, "I just want somebody who loves me to be there."
Mm-hmm.
And she's crying. And you're expecting, in kind of a schmaltzy sort of drama, after-school special kind of way, that he would, like, take her in his arms, and there would be this amazing upswell of music, and their relationship would be saved and whatever. And he sits down on the bed next to her, and he says, "I love you," and awkwardly pats her on the shoulder. And I thought, that's amazing.
It was.
Because he's really being emotionally honest, but he's not pushing it. And there isn't this whole ridiculous, you know, instant fixing of their relationship.
Yeah.
But it's a start. And I thought it was really beautifully done.
I thought it was great.
I thought it was the best scene in the movie.
Me too. I thought I liked all the scenes that he was in.
Yeah, yeah. I thought he was so well written.
I mean, he wasn't in it very much.
No.
But I did like it.
I thought he was so
well
written as a slightly awkward guy who suddenly got this emotionally damaged teenager to deal with.
Yeah.
He's trying so hard, but he's a bit rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was great.
Yeah.
What else you got?
I'm just trying to scan through my notes. I've got a line here that just says, "Is anyone in this under 25? They're all supposed to be 17.
Did you look them up again? I was going
to
look them up. How old they were.
Just they...
I didn't think they were that bad.
Okay.
They weren't as bad as some...
Oh, when she moves to Chicago and she moves into his place, and his place is all...
Slightly falling apart.
I mean, I may be remarkably naive. Let's scratch that. I am remarkably naive. But I'm always confused. It's a very common trope in American television to go into apartment blocks with flickery lighting and peeling paintwork and stuff.
Mm.
And, you know, once you've paid the rent and once you've paid for the heating and once you've, you know, paid for dinner, a can of paint isn't that expensive.
Well.
So I kind of thought that it wouldn't be, you know, considering he's working full time. But anyway, that was a thing. But where's my point?
Well, he does. He makes the room up eventually.
He does. But He's
a busy man.
But the other thing is, she walks out of the front door into the street in front of where she's living, and what are there multiple instances of directly outside her front door?
No idea.
People standing round braziers.
Really?
Yeah, there's like three of them in the street.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. So it's a... this is a poor neighbourhood trope, is after dark, there are...
homeless people standing
around
braziers.
Homeless people standing around braziers. Yeah.
I didn't spot that at all.
Oh, yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was definitely a thing.
Well, in terms of the class thing, I mean, it's very much that, you know, her living situation isn't that much different to theirs when she actually moves to Chicago. She doesn't live in a better neighbourhood. But I suppose she did when she lived with her mum.
Hmm.
I suppose that's the point. I don't know, anyway.
Can I do some other quick bits?
Of course.
There is relentless, unending background music all the time.
Oh, I didn't notice.
It's just... it's one of those films where the music very strongly telegraphs you the emotions you're supposed to be having while you're watching.
Yeah, it didn't impinge on me.
Mm.
I don't often notice the music, but I mean, I know it's really, really bad when I notice the music, and I didn't really in this.
It's interesting to give you an idea of what the director and the writer are trying to do, that the film's official theme is True Colours.
I was going to say, yes, the music, when it did impinge, was the scene when they were getting... it was clear that they were going to have sex. The song that was playing over it was True Colours, and I was like... that's a bit on the nose.
Yeah.
Just a smidge.
Just a smidge.
Just a smidge. Yes. So I did notice it that in that scene.
So yes, that was definitely a thing. Some of the writing, I would never bust a cap in your ass.
Yes.
It's just, what is this writer trying
to
do?
Yeah, well, they're trying to like do the fish out of water thing, because she's trying to kind of get in with them by taking on their... speech patterns, and it always just comes out really awkward.
So,
but it's kind of meant to.
We very, very briefly, right at the start of the film, see Sarah talking to a white friend of hers at her old school.
Lindsay.
And then Lindsay phones up at some point in time to
ask her...
yeah, there
are two things about Lindsay.
She prays all the time.
Yeah, so there's when she's talking to... it's before the original audition. She's talking to Sarah in the hallway at school, and she says, how are you feeling about the audition? And Sarah's like, oh, I'm quite nervous. And she's like, oh, let's pray together. And she starts praying in the middle of the school hallway, and Sarah looks really uncomfortable about
it.
She does, yeah. But she's obviously still friends with her, so it's not a massive issue. Yes, and then she talks to Lindsay on the phone, and she says, you know, how are you supposed to meet anybody when you're, you know, at that school? And Sarah says, actually, I have met a guy. He's really cool. And Lindsay goes, there are
white
guys
at
your
school?
Yeah. And Sarah says, no, actually, there aren't, despite the fact that there are at least two or three.
Yeah.
But still, yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that was definitely a thing.
Mm-hmm.
What else we got down here? Oh, Lindsay says, have you seen anybody get shot yet?
Yes, that's the other thing she says.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think I'm done.
So, I mean, diversity, there are only, I think, four white people who speak. So there's Sarah and her dad and her mum in the flashbacks and the judge at the end of the audition.
And Lindsay.
Oh, and Lindsay. Yes, so that's five, actually. It's more than I thought.
I think there's a couple of kids in the cafeteria get one line each.
I don't think there are, but if you say so.
Mm.
But, yeah, most of the kids at the school are black.
Mm-hmm.
The teachers that we see are also black.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The teachers are all nice.
The teachers are all nice, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But Snooki, who we haven't really talked about, who is Derek's other friend and is the comedy sidekick.
The comedy relief.
I liked
him. I thought he was cool, but he's hardly in it.
He's hardly in it, and he's also introduced... by when they're talking about Truman Capote in the literature class, he calls him a sweet tooth, a straight up fag.
Okay.
And the teacher doesn't say anything.
Oh, okay.
Which is slightly problematical.
Yes. Yeah, 2001, you'd think that you might have had a gay character, but I don't suppose you've got space, you've got so much other stuff you already want to talk about.
And on the ethnicity thing, whilst there are very few white characters in it, the protagonist is white, and it is almost entirely from her point of view.
I mean, she is whiter than gosh, she's
yeah, she whiter than white, so white.
She's so white,
so incredibly white. Yes, so you know, it has issues. Let's say,
I think that I can't speak for the director, but I think the writer is trying incredibly hard to make what he feels are important social statements about the unfortunate and unnecessary situations that lots of young people find themselves in.
Yes, I agree.
So he is trying to do a job of getting his important political points over in a thing that he thinks will be popular to the kind of people he wants to see the film.
Yes.
So I don't...
We will give him that.
I don't think he's done an amazingly good job, but I think he's trying really hard.
Yes.
I think the problem is I hadn't considered it, but on reflection, following what you've said, that I agree that sadly the biggest problem really is the casting and not casting actual people who can dance.
Yes.
Which is a shame because...
Well, they fixed that in the Step Up movies.
Oh, okay.
By casting Channing Tatum.
Oh, when he was how old?
Not fantastically older than he needed to be.
Well, okay.
But still probably older than he was meant to be.
Quite a while ago then, presumably.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Well, he's about the same age as me.
Okay. But it's a little bit of a shame in a way because both Julia Stiles and her dad and Derek and Chenille are all really... In fact, all the characters are really good.
Yes, yeah, the acting's great.
Yeah.
I don't have any issue with the acting.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so that about wraps it up for this month's discussion. It's time for ratings. We use a standard 5-star rating system with half stars allowed. Dave, what is your rating for Save the Last Dance?
See, normally I would consider this in advance and I'd write it in my notes, but I haven't really thought about it, so I'm just going to have to do it on the hoof. I think 2, I think.
Okay.
Because the acting is really good and the writer has his heart in the right place.
Okay. Fair enough.
What about you?
I wrote on the back of my notes... Can I dare give it 3.5? I don't think I can.
Okay.
But I am going to give it 3.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, I don't know. I mean, it has issues, let's say, but I still liked it.
Do you still love it?
I mean, it wasn't how I remembered it. I mean, it was a lot more cliched and a lot clunkier than I remembered, but I did still enjoy it. So what is your choice for next month?
So last time we had serious and this time we had kind of romantic, and then next time we're going to have a combination of the serious and the one thing that you really don't like.
Uh-oh.
The funny.
Oh no. Go on.
Because we're going to do Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Love the Bomb.
Oh, God. I've been avoiding this film for 30 years. You're really going to make me do it?
Yeah.
Okay. It does say in the script, fan brackets reaction, option to veto.
Oh. It's a wonderful film.
Okay. I'm not going to veto.
Okay.
But apparently I do have the veto power, but I won't. It's fine.
Okay. Well... This wraps it up for this month's episode of We Shall Love It Tomorrow. Many thanks to Cambo for our theme music, and thank you to everyone who tunes in to our show. If you like it, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you have any comments, or if you want to tell us about a time you shared some media you love and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can email us at willyoustillloveit@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And remember, you can buy our merch at bit.ly/loveittomorrowpodcast with hyphens where the spaces would be. And please remember to join us next month to find out what Annie thinks of Dr. Strangelove.
And whether or not Dave still loves it after our discussion.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.